Universität Hamburg.
Hi, great to be here. I'd like to talk over the next 10 minutes about our approach to sustaining performance, not just peak performance. It's been a really busy year for us since the last ISC. Last summer, we launched the Cray XE6 supercomputer, and we've shipped over 5 petaflops of systems. In the top 5, or the top 100 market where we really focus, we now have the most machines of any vendor in the top 10 and the top 50 and the top 100. But they're not all just big machines. We've had quite a bit of momentum now in the little brother of the XE6, what we call the mini or mid-range systems, the XE6M. Most of these systems have been shipped into research and academic environments. We just this morning announced our latest addition to the fold, GE Global Research, buying XE6Ms. And the XE6M basically is the little brother. It's a cost-reduced version of the XE6, provides all the scalability benefits, but at a lower price point. We've also been investing quite a bit over the last year in Europe. We announced last year that we had previously announced at December of 2009, the start of the Cray Exascale Research Initiative in Europe, where we've done a lot of research projects going on with a number of different key customers. We now have several Cray Centers of Excellence modeled after the original Center of Excellence that we built at Oak Ridge National Lab a few years ago. We're partnering with a number of customers in several of the big European projects, and we actually have several of our senior top engineers now located in Europe working on a number of the key technologies for the company moving forward. One of the things that we've had happen recently, which is nice to announce, not really announce, but talk about or highlight here in Germany, is our first flagship system going into a large German center at HLRS. This will be the first large XE6 system to be delivered with the next generation Interlagos processor going in a little bit later this year. And the contract also included the first large Cascade system order, which is our next generation system coming in a couple of years. Another system I'd like to highlight is at PDC in Sweden. This started out as an XT5 mini system and has since been upgraded to an XE6 large-scale system with the next generation Gemini interconnect. So what excites me most about the Cray product line is not the top 500 list. The Jaguar system, which is the largest system we've installed to date, spent a few turns on the top of the top 500 list. But what's exciting to me is that it is the only machine that's actually delivering petascale science. There are now 13 machines with a peak of a petaflop or more, but only one machine that is delivering petaflops in real applications. There are at least 5 different applications in a number of different areas that are sustaining above an exaflop in performance. One of them is actually getting higher sustained peak than LINPACK, which is pretty interesting. If we look this last year at the Gordon Bell finalists, there were 6 finalists, 4 of them, the 4 on the left, the adaptive mesh refinement, blood flow simulation, which was the winner, electron state material science, and earthquakes, all were running on the Jaguar system. But it's not just big science, grand challenges that are running on our systems. BMI, which is a commercial company, approached Oak Ridge as part of their HPC industrial partnership program to get time on Jaguar to develop airflow attachments that fit under the bottom of long-haul trucks. And they found a way to achieve improvements in energy or gas mileage by 7 to 12%. They brought it to prototype much faster than they could have without the large-scale computational fluid dynamics simulations that they were doing on the Oak Ridge machine. So all of these results were on, that I just highlighted, were on Jaguar, which is an XT5 system. Last year, of course, we launched the XE6. The XE6 system packs 8 of the latest Opteron Manicore processors onto a single compute blade, providing a compute node with over 80 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth and over 200 gigaflops of performance. The heart of the XE6 system is the new Gemini interconnect. This is available as a simple card upgrade to the existing XT5 systems or XT6 systems. It provides a massive increase in the amount of message traffic, the number of messages that you can send per second, drops down the message latency, provides global address space capabilities across the machine. And we have customers routinely that are seeing tens of percent improvement or up to 2x application improvement just taking the existing system and swapping out the old C-Star networks for the new Gemini network. So it's been a tremendous success. This is an illustration of why a custom network is important and why, to get back to the earlier question today, why it's worth investing a lot of money to build a custom interconnect. So this is a chart showing a challenging benchmark. This is the HBCC random ring latency benchmark. And everybody usually talks about, I don't know if you can see this, the very left-hand point. We all talk about the unloaded latency between two nearest neighbor points in the network. But when you run a real application on a large number of cores, the latency does something very different. The red line here is showing what the HPC random ring latency looks like on an 8-core Nehalem QDR InfiniBand ring. When you get more cores and more contention, latency skyrockets. When you add more cores, same network, but going from Nehalem up to Westmere where you have 12 cores, the latency situation looks worse. The XE6 system with the Gemini interconnect, beautifully flat network scaling with a 24-core node. That's the reason why we build custom interconnects. So what we're planning to do now, the sort of the next interesting thing going on at Cray, is to take our focus on productive, sustained performance and bring it to the world of accelerated computing. Just last month, we announced the Cray XK6 supercomputer. This takes the latest Interlagos AMD Opteron processor, marries it with the latest Tesla 2090 GPU, combines it with a Cray interconnect and Cray's Cray Linux environment, our scalable Linux-based operating system, to build a real production-worthy accelerated compute blade. You can have any number of graphics GPU compute blades mixed in with your regular pure Opteron-based compute blades in the system. This is a picture of a compute blade. It looks like our normal XE6. It's plug compatible with the XE6 system, fits into the Gemini 3D Taurus interconnect. But instead of four dual socket Opteron nodes, we have four nodes with an Opteron coupled with the GPU. You can upgrade this next year to the next generation Kepler GPU when they come online simply by removing this SXM module and plopping in, taking out the Fermi Plus and plopping in the, I don't know if you plop so much as screw, the Kepler GPU module. And the software for the XK6 system is really building on the same software infrastructure that we have in the XE system. So our full stack of debuggers and performance tools, the job schedulers, third-party software available through our cluster compatibility mode, compilers, et cetera, are available, but they'll be extended to augment the system and support GPUs. We'll have PGI compilers for GPUs. We'll have CUDA with the NVIDIA software development kit. But Cray is investing a tremendous amount of our energy in the programming environment for GPUs. We're putting a lot of work into enhanced libraries, using our auto-tuning framework to provide highly performant GPU-based libraries, so codes that use BLAS or other scientific libraries can just transparently get the performance of the GPUs. We're building our own GPU compiler. Cray has a compiler called the Cray Compilation Environment, which has very good performance and also native support for global address space languages. Now it will have native support for the GPUs. And Cray is working to provide an open standards-based programming interface for GPUs that will be based on directives. This is activity taking part as part of the OpenMP standards group. Directives for compilers that will allow you to have one code that can work equally well on CPUs and GPUs. CUDA is great. You can get great performance with CUDA. But we think long-term we need a programming environment that allows you to carry one code base forward and get portability between machines at any given point of time and portability forward in time. So what we ask the users to do is simply expose the parallelism in their applications and then let the compiler and the runtime focus on mapping that parallelism onto the machines. And what we found is that when you go through the work to expose the parallelism using this directive-based approach, not only will it work well on the GPU-based machines, but you get better performance on the CPU-based machines as well. And so we think this is a much more sustainable path going forward that we're pretty excited about. With that, I will stand for the Inquisition.
Thank you very much, Steve. Our first question comes from Felix Schürmann.
Thank you, Steve. You have a reputation to lose, right, with your sustained performance on all the different terror, PETA, and maybe exascale level. Now, a lot of that was in the past, presumably because you offered the users a simple environment of x86 processors, and now you're taking a big risk to essentially propose accelerated structures to continue to deliver the same sustained performance. Now, there's a lot of programming models for expressing the parallelism. Why do you think yours will work?
Well, I think from a programming model perspective, having an open interface is key, right? You have to have a programming model that's portable because people, make no mistake, people are going to have to invest a tremendous amount of work to take their applications from the petascale to the exascale, or even from the terascale up to the petascale. My phone is ringing, good grief. We don't think that work should be done in a proprietary way. If you're going to do the work, it needs to be done in a way that has portability across machines and forward in time. And so we think the right programming paradigm is to ask users to expose parallelism at as high a level in the call tree as possible, and then let the compiler and runtime take care of the mechanics. Taking care of the mechanics is not something that you really want to ask the users to do. It's not pretty, and then it can be very specific to a particular architecture. So that's why we think it's the right programming model. Ask the users to do what they can do, and then let the compilers and runtime do what it can do. The question about the architecture is maybe even a thornier issue. It's not clear that accelerators are going to take off, how quickly accelerators are going to take off. I do believe that long-term, a hybrid multi-core approach is inherently superior to other approaches. You need to have a small number of fast cores to run serial code, and the vast majority of your cores need to be optimized for energy efficiency. So I think that GPUs are a stepping stone in that direction. Pretty soon, within the next few years, we won't have discrete CPUs and GPUs. They'll be married together on one chip. But that heterogeneous nature, I think, is going to be required to hit the energy goals that we have over the next decade.
Next question by Gerhard Wellein.
Okay. Thanks a lot for your very interesting talk. Cray is known and did a great job in recent years for scaling both machine architecture and applications to thousands of nodes. And one of the foundations of this success was that you kept the balance between node performance and interconnect performance. Now putting in a GPU, which increases the node performance by a factor of 3, 5, or next generation 10x, how do you address those challenges in the network? Are you going to increase the bandwidth as well, or are you expecting a large number of very loosely coupled GPU applications?
Right. Excellent question. And our response to that is really twofold. Absolutely, we're trying to increase the bandwidth, and we're trying to do it in the most cost-effective way possible. The network that I talked about that came out last year really made radical improvements to the NIC architecture. Our next-generation network makes radical improvements to the global bandwidth and the overall bandwidth of the system. Great architecture. I'd love to talk to you more in a different context about that. But the reality is that flops are increasing faster than network bandwidth. And that's just physics, and it's not going to change. And we are all going to have to get used to the fact that traditional ratios of network bandwidth per flop are going to decrease. We're helped partway by surface-to-volume ratios. For codes that are doing, you know, explicit 3D communication sorts of algorithms, as you grow the beefiness of your node, a smaller fraction of your communication has to leave that sphere. There are other codes that are more dominated by global communication, and those codes are going to be somewhat inherently left behind. There's nothing we can do about that other than build the most cost-effective network we can and the most cost-effective global bandwidth, and then provide the flexibility so that only the people that really need the global bandwidth need to invest in it, because it will be expensive.